Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
And watch this, Sai. I'm eating on the podcast for once.
Oh, look at you.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun, right?
It's really fun.
See?
I'm really enjoying
it. You're into
this.
It now.
Yeah. Have a little salad action. How you been, Sai?
Oh, man. Really good.
What's been going on?
Really good.
Give us a
Hold on. Before I forget, I just want to shout out Liv and Caitlin, some YNAP followers from Australia that came to the Comedy Cellar and to my improv show because they always hear us talking about it. And they were very nice young ladies, so I promise I would shout them out.
You fuck either of them?
No.
No?
No.
You sure?
I should have.
Were they cute?
Yeah, very cute.
Really?
Yeah.
And the Australian accent, the whole nine?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I love the accent.
I've never met any YNAP fans from Australia
who are
chicks.
I got a lot of YNAP fans lately. Shout out to all of you guys, but sorry, I just remember the chicks, you know what I'm saying?
Anything else new? When's your Gaffigan episode coming out?
I don't know. I don't know which episode it is. I noticed... Oh, so please, every Friday night, 8:30, I have my UCB improv show. You should come check that out here on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, Avenue A and 3rd Street. And I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts lately, so you got to get your business in up top. Got to get your business in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I got... So I don't know when Gaffney...
Did you hear... Obama on Mark Maron.
No, I didn't hear it yet.
We have him next week.
We got Obama?
Yeah. Oh, nice. It's a follow-up. He's doing a follow-up to Maron on ours. I want to give a shout-out to all of our dedicated YNAP fans.
Yeah.
Who have been commenting on every post that me and Sife put up.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, Twitter, whatever. Just going, YNAP?
Yeah.
Where the fuck's YNAP? Yo, what the fuck's good with YNAP? None of you guys ever send us just nice random notes about mm-hmm. the consistency of YNAP.
Yeah.
Like, we got no credit for YNAP's consistency picking up dramatically over the last year.
Extensively.
I don't know if that's the right word to use.
I like it.
And particularly after you left the station, we could have fallen apart.
Yeah.
Did we?
No. Got stronger.
We got stronger. No one goes, man, I fuck with y'all. Y'all are really making time for us. Because we know you don't really get that much money and blah, blah. No, they don't say that. No. But when the episode, we've only been gone 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're acting as if we disappeared for life.
No, and guess what? Go back and listen to some old ones if we're not there this week.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your fandom, but
fuck
shut
off.
The fuck up.
Yeah, shut the fuck up at the same time. Anyways, guys.
Oh, that kid from Denver. Shout out that kid from Denver.
Is that like his name or you just don't know?
I don't remember his name.
Oh, okay.
I remember Liv and Caitlin.
Oh, that's nice.
But the annals of that kid from Denver.
Hey, remember how in the last episode I said, I told you, Sife, that I had never, ever in history. Hey, Gabby, what could you wait?
Oh, yeah. Some black guy.
Oh, that sounds like off to a good start
from
the
black guy from London. He was also, I remember what I had to say.
Okay, here we go.
I'm sorry, Rook. Sorry, guys. One second. Here's the deal, fuck faces. Two guys came up to me in the bar that around the corner from the Cellar, Fat Black Pussycat. The Cellar owns it. It's like the connector.
Right.
So I was in there one night. Two guys came up to me separately. Like, hey, Sife, I know you don't do small talk, but I just wanted to say I like Juan Epstein. That's not small talk, fuck faces.
Did you yell at them for that?
No, I was in a bad mood. I had an argument with somebody.
So you didn't even have small
talk? But they're like, hey, I know you don't like small talk. I just want to say I like YNAP. No, that's not small talk. That's very big talk.
Oh, and you appreciate it big time.
Fans or something interesting, something motivating. I will sit and have conversations with strangers if I'm learning something, if there's something interesting about the conversation. Small talk is like, oh, it's hot out, huh? That's small talk. I'm not saying I don't talk to strangers. I'm saying if you're a stranger and you got and you're going to talk to me, have something to say.
And speak cleanly.
Have big talk.
And speak very cleanly and at one volume.
Always at one volume.
So someone, I told you this recently, I don't know if I said on the podcast, the best tweet I ever got after we spent that podcast where we talked about a lot of stuff, including like Charlamagne and stuff. Someone was like, one thing I learned about Sife. You can try to end his career and he will still be friends with you. But if you mention how the weather is, he fucking hates your
dead.
Guts.
You're dead to me.
Yeah, you realize that you're the member of the crew, though, that they're like people. You're like the Larry David who people are scared to talk to.
But don't be. Just have something good to say. Like Charlamagne try to destroy my career. That's big talk.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
If Charlamagne come up to me and be like, oh, it's hot outside, but get the fuck out of here, man.
Okay.
Big talk. Big talk only.
Okay. All
right. Sorry.
Saif, did you, what do you think of Caitlyn Jenner on the ESPYs yesterday? I just wanted to ask you about something I knew you didn't watch or care about. Anyways, guys, we have two great people with us today. We have Sasha Jenkins from Mass Appeal and like
Ego Trip.
Ego Trip and
he, what was before Ego Trip?
Queens.
Queens, New York.
Beat down before that.
Beat down.
For the older folks.
And now, oh man, he's done a ton of stuff. By the way, I can't imagine. You and Elliot Wilson used to be partners, right, at some point?
Yes.
Can you fathom that, Saif?
Not life partners, though.
Not life partners, but business partners. Do you guys talk at all anymore?
If I see him, we have fond conversations. We went to high school together. You know, he came from the projects. You know, I'm very happy for whatever success he has, and he's really good at what he does, and mazel tov is... as my ancestors say.
There's just a lot of snarkiness in one room. I can't imagine.
No, he came from the bottom and
Who came more from the bottom, you or Elliot? Like, who had more, who had like 30 cents in their pocket versus like 15 cents in your pocket?
Well, Elliot grew up with two parents, so I think that.
What?
Bitch. Sellout. What a fucking sellout.
In the projects fucker. With two parents. So I think that gives, you know, I think that's a good thing.
And how you guys met? You went to school together?
Went to Bryant High School together. I did not know him in high school. And it was funny. I was doing Beatdown, Matt newspaper years later. And some kid came up and took the newspaper. And I said to my partner at the time, I know that kid. I went to high school with him. He said, yeah, I know that kid too. He went to college with me. And then the next day we got a phone call and it was him. And he was like, yo, I want to write for you guys and blah, blah, blah. The rest is kind of history. We did Beat Down. That fell apart. Then me and Elliot launched the Ego Trip and the rest.
Suffice it to say, you guys didn't know each other well because neither of you were the most popular kids in your high school?
I was definitely way more popular than Elliot.
Well, you were in a band. Were you in a band already?
No, I was a graffiti writer and other stuff. And actually, there was some kid, a nice young Latino gentleman who was a graffiti writer because typically most Latinos were graffiti writers at that time, who had gone over me on a chair.
Whoa.
And I was just bigger than him and I was being a jerk and I was like, yo, my man, don't ever go over my shit. I will fuck you up. And I remember Elliot just being in the background and I thought he was like some random Puerto Rican kid who like wrote graffiti. And then years later you find out like Elliot was just a kid who loved hip hop and collected records and was not in the streets and didn't write graffiti. And
wait,
was just
oh, he's
a nice
the one
kid.
That wrote over you?
No, he was standing next to the kid who I was like trying to like be.
He almost got bodied by Sasha because off of that.
Well, he looked shook, but he had no idea what we were talking about. You know what I mean? So
we're talking about Elliot.
Yeah,
Wilson from Rap Radar.
Yeah, because originally these guys worked together at Ego Trip and did a lot of great work.
Do you get sick of people seeing you and saying, "What's up with Elliot?"
Well, I'm sure that happens to him sometimes, but I think that what made us great at the time when we were doing what we were doing was we were two completely different people with different value systems.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, we had a great work ethic, but the stuff that Elliot's into, I've never been into.
That's small talk, though. I don't give a fuck where Rosenberg is.
Right.
If we're not recording One Up.
Never? I mean, what about?
I mean, not enough for me to be on stage. And the question asked is, where's Rosenberg?
On stage, someone did that?
All the time.
Yo, where's Rosenberg? Because you get on stages. But that's your fault for being on stage.
I get on stage every day. But
yeah, that's your fault.
Well, the difference is you guys are like in, you know, I don't want to say in the industry, but you guys have a profile.
In public.
Elliot is like in the industry, knows people and shit. Like, I'm...
Your background. You're down to play the back.
I got a family. I do my music. I mind my business. I do Mass Appeal. I'm the OG. I'm not on social media or anything like that. So I'm not really in the mix of anything.
So you don't get it as much.
So anyone who would run into me, first of all, most people have been in the business as long as me, either own laundromats or like work for UPS. And if you know who I, you know what I'm saying? Anyone who would know me, who would know him, would be someone who is my age or something. These young kids who know him as YN or whatever wouldn't know who I was.
Right. They don't even know the whole story. No. Anyways, I don't know how we ended up on that. I just popped in my head because I always think of you guys working together. It always sounds funny to me.
Why does it sound funny?
Because you guys have you have different personalities with like a couple of similarities. Yes, but we're a random combination.
So what are the similarities? I'm curious.
Well, love of hip hop,
producing publications,
producing media related to hip hop,
right?
You're both in my. I think you guys both are knowledgeable of hip hop, and both know you're very knowledgeable of hip hop.
Ah,
Yes.
Funny thing is, I haven't really listened to hip hop in years.
I know, but you still know.
I didn't even listen to hip hop when I was doing all that stuff. Really?
Really?
Not really.
You're one of those. I don't even listen to rap.
I mean, it's who I am. I don't have to really listen to it to know what's going on with it.
So you, what do you listen to currently? You're not currently listening to anything?
Hip-hop?
Well, this guy, Kendrick, on the cover of the big Mass Appeal book.
I think Kendrick is a really talented artist. I respect what he's doing. But all this stuff where basically black people are rapping about killing themselves and killing each other. Don't get me wrong. Trife Life, one of my favorite songs. Mobb Deep, I met Havoc writing Graffiti on a Train. I know Havoc before all this stuff. Trife Life is one of my favorite songs. But as an adult, when I listen back to that song, and it's a song's basically about a guy who had a girlfriend in Queensbridge who made the mistake of wearing a chain. So instead of just giving it up, they shot him in the head. Like, I still enjoy the song, but I'm at a different place. I can't really listen to young kids rapping about dumb shit, and I can't socialize with adults who
pretend to identify with young kids rapping about
or
dumb shit.
I couldn't have an intellectual conversation with someone who centers themselves around that kind of music. Not judging people, it's just I'm at a different place.
Not for you right now.
No.
I think you just summarized how I feel, which I could never get the words out properly.
Is that how you feel?
Somewhat, yeah.
But you also do like playing some random.
I love Meek Mill.
You love me.
Love Meek Mill. He kills everybody.
But you also love you love some records that are like random, you know, trappish, thugged out songs that they play well in the club. And you enjoy playing them out.
I do, but I can't talk about them.
Right, right.
There's no substance there.
Right.
It's like a good melody.
And what about nap rap?
Clever. There's some clever shit. I don't fuck with nap rap, man.
With nap rap. Syfe coined a great phase. He says that I listen to nap rap.
Nap rap is this new real vibey hip hop that's almost trying to be 90s, but they're not even great 90s records. They were like bad B-side 90s records. But it's because these kids think that they have some sample drums that they're making 90s records. But I'm like, no, Ice Cream was an incredible record. Like, the sound of it, the rhymes, the beat, like, not just because it had some sample drums.
But bringing it to what you're saying about Ice Cream, like Wu-Tang Clan, Protect Your Neck, Ghost got shot in the neck. Like, you're talking about guys from the projects who sold drugs and have been through some shit, but there was a level of fantasy in their music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff now is so literal that it's just like, it's like I'm not listening to poetry, I'm listening to someone talking to me in my face about shit I could give a fuck about.
Yeah, there's no creativity to saying you sell drugs.
No, it's literally like, I sell drugs.
Yeah.
It's like, my man, I need a little more if you're going to
I mean, Bobby Shmurda, I mean, it's a sad, terrible kind of story, but like, it's not really about the music. And then you see him dancing for fucking executives at whatever fucking place.
No, this is crazy you're saying this right now. I had this conversation, this won't be surprising when I say who I was having the conversation with. I had a conversation about that exact thing you're saying, that moment, 3 days ago in Des Moines, Iowa, with Killer Mike and LP. And we were sitting there having a conversation about how fucking sad it is. Because I didn't remember the closeness and time proximity of when Bobby Shmurda was performing on the table for the executives. Like, oh, look how thugged out he is. That it was like a week later that he ended up in jail. Like, how soon it was and how fucking tragic that is.
I mean, you know, hip hop is a great, it can change your life. Like, you know, my film, Bringing It Full Circle to Fresh Dressed, right? It's this film that I directed. It's about the history of hip-hop fashion, but it's really about the environment and the climate that spawned the culture. You'll be happy to know, as a Latino, not that I set out to do this or because my
only
son...
Only Latino for the jokes.
Or that my son's half Dominican, but you see in this film the pivotal role that Latinos have had throughout the history of the culture. For instance, you know, gang culture, you know, with the jackets and all that stuff, mm-hmm. and how that transitioned into this energy that's on the street up through like Thurston Howell III. Mm-hmm. There's so many really important people that you learn about in this film. But, you know, one of the executive producers on the film is Nasir Jones. Nasir went to the same crappy junior high school. And so when we had our screening and I made my whole emotional story, I got choked up. I had a magic marker in my hand and I said, you know, we went to this school in Queens and they literally tried to tell us that the only thing we could be in life was go to trade school and be a mechanic. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a mechanic. There's nothing wrong with trade school. But these folks were horrible babysitters and had no expectations for us. Yeah. Nas hated school. His father told him, I'm tired of hearing this shit. You know what? Just drop out.
Mm.
Nas dropped out in the ninth grade. Now, what if Nas would have gone on to be a mechanic? I guess he could have had a nice life. But folks never really had much, you know, had expectations for us. That's why you talk about Elliot. Elliot came from Woodside Projects and went to Bryan High School and had a shitty education and has been able to use hip-hop as a platform to transform his life and put on other people. So regardless of anything...
Same with me.
Yeah. You know, I have a real respect for the energy. I met Havoc from Mobb Deep writing Graffiti. I have a respect for the energy that came out of it. But my film was also about the environment and the climate that created, you know, hip-hop and hip-hop fashion. And to me, the fashion is a reaction to the environment, the climate. In the South Bronx in the 70s, it was burnt out. It looked like World War II Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Who were they inspired by? They were inspired by the Hells Angels. And so how they dressed was a reflection of their environment. In the 80s, when there's all this money, there's crack and all this stuff happening, you've got Dapper Dan. Who can afford to shop there? There's this really strong economy in crack, and brothers could afford to buy all this apparel, you know? So, and then eventually the rappers got hip and said, hey, you know what? No one's making clothing for us. Let's get this money too. And so then you had this big rise of all these clothing brands. Everyone had a clothing line, including Eminem. I guess people took offense to me mentioning that M had a failed clothing line. I did Eminem's book. I have lots of respect for him, but at the end of the day, I'm a journalist.
Offense.
Well, you know, some people took offense to me putting Eminem in the film and pointing out that he too had a clothing line that wasn't successful. And so as one of the biggest artists in the world, just to sort of elaborate on this trend that so many people are cashing in on. Eminem's one of the greatest rappers of all time. He's come out himself and criticized some of his own records. I don't imagine that he would be offended by someone commenting on his clothing line, but other people were and kind of went out of their way to, you know, stop me from doing certain things. And that's cool. But at the end of the day, I'm a journalist. And my duty is to tell the stories in a compelling way. And as someone who is an insider, and as someone who is like me, who is, it's rare that a person like me, a person of color, has the opportunity to tell these stories. And as long as I have the opportunity to tell these stories, I'm going to tell them regardless, you know. But it was really important for me, from an insider's perspective, to really tell this story. And that's where someone like Ralph McDaniels comes in. You know, when you see the film, there's all this really rich footage, and people who don't, who aren't of the culture, like, oh my God, that footage is so great. Where'd you get it from? It's super cool. It's like, as I said to the audience at the premiere, it's like, I didn't just make this film. All of you amazing photographers and filmmakers had a heavy hand in making this film. I just had an idea and you guys all helped me. And so Ralph McDaniels, as someone who, as an inner city kid, who was a latchkey kid in a single parent home in New York City, having Video Music Box every day as someone to something to look forward to, like people call him out Uncle Ralph. Like, yes, this dude, to many people, wasn't just an uncle. He was a dad. He was an older brother. And, you know, the way his show was formatted, it brought the culture together in a way that was very tangible and real. Like, kids who, this is before the internet, you know, kids who, you know, the next day would come in and talk about, yo, you see that special ed video? Yo, Ralph, why Ralph had to talk over it at the very end, you know what I'm saying? Plugging his own shit. You didn't get to see the whole thing, but that was, you know, a part of his special sauce. But that's what these, you know, for me as someone who is an insider, I could never, going back to like, do I listen to hip hop or not? It doesn't matter. Like, I moved from Silver Spring, Maryland in 1977 to Astoria, Queens, and my mother told me, go outside with a football and make friends. And you, as someone from that area, understand what that was and what I came into. And what I came into was people playing music in the park, people with markers and spray paint, people rapping and dancing. And I said, what the fuck is this? And you know what? We didn't know what it was. And now the world knows what it is. It's coalesced and has become this culture and this language. And that was a big part of what I was trying to express in my film. Fashion for us was language. If I was from Queens and he was from Brooklyn, I could tell based on the way he dressed where he was from.
Do you think you could still do that?
Hell fucking no.
It's a fucking just a blanket now. Like the same, I think the internet ruined the little diverse little sections and shit. Any club, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. You're on a fucking amazing tangent just now. But music wise, any club you go to in America, same shit, same songs, same VIP bottle service, same style of DJing. It used to be like, yo, West Coast, LA versus Bay and Midwest. They like a lot of different shit. Miami had its own sound. Now it's like exactly the same club everywhere you go. And clothes too.
And that was the
New World Order.
But that's what hip hop coming out of gang culture, right? There was a level of competitiveness. It was about identity and wanting to establish yourself. So coming up, like, you wanted to stand out. And I learned from hip hop. Hip hop taught me at a young age, be original, stand out. You know, what did graffiti teach me? How to market myself. Like, I wasn't the most famous graffiti writer. I was a toy. But guess what? There are way more toys than there are kings. Yeah. And kings would not be recognized if the toys weren't there. But I learned marketing. And I learned politics. You can't go to this area because these guys run this train yard. Right. Or you'll get fucked up. You got to know someone, you know? Graffiti writers left their neighborhoods at a time where unless you were on a sports team, you didn't know white kids from the Upper East Side.
Right.
You didn't leave your neighborhood. So graffiti taught me how to network outside of my neighborhood. These are all these things that going to public schools, I didn't realize I was learning this because ultimately I was being miseducated and babysat.
Yeah.
But through the great spirit of what hip hop is and street culture is, I was able to distill the best of that. And I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity to make this film and hopefully more people like me, not just me. It's Ralph telling his stories. It's Jamel Shabazz. It's all these people in this film telling their stories. Dapper Dan. Hopefully more of us have the opportunity to tell the story.
Did you bring up Nas's clothing line?
Which one? He has many.
The ones that didn't do well.
Well, Esco is in the film. Are you talking about Esco?
Yes.
Another Latino who, you know, had
Make
to give
it sure,
him
sure, if you're going to shout out.
Esco's in there.
You want Nas to get it, Nas. Too.
Everybody got to get it.
Well, I only have 82 minutes. So, I mean, Master P could have got it. A lot of people could have got it.
Some people got saved. And where can people see this film?
Well, it was in theaters, but now you can get it on iTunes. Please, if you can, go out and support it. And
it was in theaters?
Not anymore. Yeah, it was in documentaries typically don't have that long of a run.
How come I didn't know? I wish I would have known.
It was quick, right? It was quick.
2 weeks, which is a respectable...
I would have went and saw it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. 2 weeks is a respectable amount of time. Now you can get it on iTunes, and then in the fall, it will be on CNN, because that's who I essentially produced it with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's dope.
And CNN is, you know, looking to connect with... They're looking to expand their audience.
You think you could put Soledad in some tight-ass, like, 80s big booty jeans?
Is that a fantasy?
It wasn't until you mixed what you were talking about with CNN, and I just...
Popped Soledad O'Brien popped up.
That makes sense. Some acid wash jeans with some high heels. Like,
I mean, some might want that for Don Lemon. It just depends.
To each his own.
Yeah, to each his own.
100%, but I'm just saying. I mean, why not balance it out?
Have Don Lemon and Soledad doing that. That's an interesting thought.
Jack Lemmon, R.I.P.
Jack Lemmon, R.I.P. 100%. I really prefer Jack Lemmon.
Do you?
To Don? Yeah, 100%.
Wait, the real Jack Lemmon?
Yes.
Oh.
I prefer Jack Lemmon to Don Lemmon. Don Lemmon annoys me.
I don't know. Jack Lemmon.
Hey, so we also have, and so we encourage everyone to go out on iTunes. If you're a hip hop head, which obviously you are because you listen to Juan Epstein, I have a hunch you'll enjoy this movie. So if you go on iTunes.
How do you do that? How do you watch it on iTunes? Do you download it or you rent it?
You can rent it or download it.
Oh, cool.
I'm gonna
buy it.
Fresh Dressed.
You're gonna buy it the full price?
How much is the full price?
$12.99, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Splurge.
Fresh.
Yeah, you made me think it was gonna be something crazy.
Fresh Dressed, guys.
Fresh dressed on iTunes.
A film by Sasha.
Sasha James. Okay, Uncle Ralph is here.
Uncle
Yo,
Ralph.
Yo.
What's up, Ralph?
I'm glad to be here, man. We're talking about clothes and Fresh Dressed and Sasha and Juan and Ep and all of that good stuff and... You know, he talked, you know, I think about in the film, we went to Delancey Street, and I was thinking about this when I was coming here. It was the first time I ever really was introduced to, you know, Jewish people, Hasidic Jews.
On Delancey Street?
On Delancey Street. That was my first, like, really, you know, opportunity to meet them, because that's where we used to go. You used to get, like, $20, your mom would give you, like, $20, and you would go to Delancey Street, and that's where they had all of the fresh gear. Everything that was new, Quarterfields.
And where were you coming from, Ralph?
I was coming from Queens at the time. And, you know, if you had $20, you could probably get a pair of jeans. No, not jeans. Dungarees. You could get a pair of dungarees for $10 and maybe two shirts, and you were good. And maybe you could get a little hot dog or something for the ride back on the train. But I never had met Hasidic Jews before. And I used to sit there and go like, what is that? You know, what is this thing happening with the hair on the side and the curly thing? And I'd be like, this is pretty interesting. And I used to go to the, like, they had celery soda. You familiar with that?
I am. Celery.
Celery, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. And I still, to this day, even though it's not the most tasty
It's soda. Nostalgic.
Right.
Well, you get that Dr. Brown celery?
Dr. Brown celery. I was thinking about that today. But it had nothing to do with, you know, with clothing or anything, but just being around the culture. And I'm sure for them it was being around us. Because we would say, nah, don't order those jeans ever again. Those are whack. Make sure you order the black ones and the blue ones. Nobody's buying those. And it was always about jeans. It, not even sneaker, because sneaker culture is really big right now. It wasn't. They didn't sell sneakers. They sold clothes and coats. Quarterfield jackets. And the, what are the glasses again, Sasha?
Gazelle?
Gazelles.
Gazelles, yeah, of course.
And that was a big part of the movie because, you know, there was some guy, was it Freddie that went down there?
Jamel Shabazz.
Jamel Shabazz, yeah. Jamel Shabazz went down and kind of revisited Delancey Street, but it doesn't exist anymore. It's a bunch of clubs now and restaurants.
None of those people are there anymore doing Gone. The same stuff?
There's like one or two, ironically, who Jamel Shabazz was talking to were merchants from way back. We randomly ran into them. And so they're not selling stuff, but they invested in real estate wisely enough. So they manage, like many of our wonderful friends in the Jewish community, they manage a lot of property in the area. So
they have the property. They got out
Orchard
of the clothing
Street,
business.
Orchard Street still got like the leather shop.
A few.
Okay.
Yeah. Very few.
But that's their like hood. Shop. That's your people's hood from way back. So
that was it.
Wow. They should own something in the Lower East Side. 100%.
Right, because they were there. They held it down.
They held it down.
And that was also the first place I got stuck up at.
Really?
Yeah.
By one of the Hasidic Jews?
No. I got on the train going back to Queens on the F train. And, you know, I had my bag of two jeans and some shirts, and I was standing there, and we went like one stop, and these guys started pushing me on my left side. I had the bag in my right hand, and the guys pushed me on my left side. I'm like, yo, dude, what's up? And I turned around, and of course, the guy on the other side grabbed the bag out of my hand when I turned around to look at him, and they would do it like when you got to the
fucking Artful Dodgered?
Yeah, but they did it to me at the train stop. Like, as soon as the train pulled into the stop, so they knew they were going to jump off. And dude grabs my bag and runs out the door. So I'm running after him. And then I look and I realize that the bag ripped and my stuff was laying on the ground. So I'm like, and he's looking at me because he knows I didn't see it. And I look down and I was like, oh, shoot, there goes my shit right here. So I'm looking at him. He's looking at me. And, you know, I gave him the finger and shit. I was like, you know, like 13 or some shit, you know, at the time. And, but yeah, I remember that clearly. So, you know, you got to watch your back.
Ralph, you were, where were you born?
I was born in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy.
And how long you stay there till?
Till about 7. Then we moved out to Queens. So that was the movement. You get a crib in Queens. You know, you live in Brooklyn, and you get the house in Queens. My grandmother would say it was Long Island, because it wasn't, you know, people didn't know what Queens was.
Yeah, Brooklyn is Long Island, too.
Yeah.
Geographically.
Yeah, right.
Relax. People.
Exactly, right.
Relax, Brooklynite.
And by the way, Trump owned all of that. His family owned all of that land back then.
Which one?
Brooklyn, Flatbush, all of that, into Queens, the Trump family. That's how deep Trump goes back, like the land. He owns all, his father owned all that.
You know, I saw something when you drive out to JFK, there's some hospital or something that's called Trump something. Yeah, I always wondered about that.
Yeah.
So that's really them.
Absolutely. You take a look
but
at
that's
some
his
maps.
His father, he bought all that shit on the West Side. And everybody said he was a loser and it was a failure. And his father like said he was made the worst deal ever. Now it's like the fucking biggest real estate in New York. Like that, the whole 60s, all the condos and stuff.
Yeah.
So. He's got that whole, even though it's unfortunate because it's sort of a nice place to live, that little neighborhood, except your building just says fucking Trump. it's so blatant, like gold letters.
I don't mind Trump. He didn't say anything bad about Puerto Ricans.
That's true. You guys are good.
Yeah, me and Trump are cool.
Yeah, until he says something about Puerto Ricans.
Well, we're Americans.
Exactly.
He was talking about those other ones.
I know. 100%. So, Ralph, were you a DJ first?
Yes, I was a DJ first. I was a guy who was plugging into lampposts back in the days.
Actually, you knew how to do it.
Oh, absolutely,
bullshit, Ralph. I'm calling you bullshit. you physically knew how to plug in the electricity.
Absolutely.
How'd you do it?
You got a little. There's a little like hole there, like a little.
Yeah, there's a little thing you can unscrew or whatever.
You can unscrew it, and in there's a plug, and it's an actual thing that you can jack
into.
Wait,
like just like a house outlet?
Yeah, like you know those orange cords. Those,
no, that can't be.
It's not. It's not that big. Yes, it is.
It's,
and it's right in there. You unplug it, and you plug your stuff right in there, and you're good.
Oh, we thought people were like splicing wires and shit.
Because when the dude had to come to fix stuff, like something was wrong with the pole, he needed like a little what was lantern type lights to hook onto.
Yeah.
And that's what he would plug into, and then he would bong.
So all you did was
mind blown.
You're the only Puerto Rican who doesn't know this. You didn't see Beach Street?
I'm Puerto Rican for the jokes only. Yeah, I saw Beach Street, but it...
When you thought that was Ramon, when Ramon had that abandoned house with the bad octopus graffiti.
Yes.
You didn't notice he had all those orange things he's talking about?
But listen,
that was from the street lights.
The street, we thought... I've been at parties when I was younger of shit plugged into the street pole, but I thought somebody was an electrician, the super came, and he knew how to cut the wires of the lamppost and make it able to plug in for power. I didn't know there was literally
just a plug.
A fucking outlet in there.
Yeah, there was a power strip inside. I didn't know.
I didn't know there was a surge protector in the fucking lamppost.
No, I thought we always thought it was hilarious that like everyone's like, yo, we were just having fun out in the park, you know, kicking it with the girls. And there was one guy who was like, I have to take my screwdriver and hook up the wires. And then it turns out it was just some dude who was like, oh, I got it. Just plugged in. So you were doing that and DJing in the park. What park were you in?
We were in Jamaica Park. We were in... That's where I met Russell Simmons also. Where else?
Little Russ.
Jamaica and Cambria Heights, Queens. All
Let them
Queens.
Know about Queens. Queens was there early, yo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, people say, you know... Let me tell you about, first
you didn't
of all...
You create it, though.
No, they didn't create it. We didn't create it.
It's okay.
But we had way better sound systems than them dudes had in the Bronx.
I'm not saying you was faking it. Yeah. But you wasn't creating.
Because most of the guys that we deal with was Jamaican guys, and they knew they were into sound.
Yeah.
And we had the sound systems were incredible in comparison to what was
the crap in the Bronx.
Flash
in
them had. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, your hood too, look, Sasha, now they were.
The Disco Twins, AKA the N-word twins before that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ask Bam. They know. Yeah. They were there. 74.
Berthas. They had those speakers. They were called Berthas. They were like, you know, they were serious.
The big joints.
The big joints. Yeah. So, yeah. So that was what was going
who
on.
Who taught you to DJ?
Wow. Who taught me to DJ? That's a good question. My man, Tony Suarez. He was a disco DJ.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Suarez or Suarez?
Suarez.
How you spell it?
Suarez.
Not sure?
Not sure if he's one of yours?
Yeah.
Can't claim him?
Sure. He's my man. He's dusted, but he's all right.
So he's the one who... How'd you get turntables?
Well, we go back to the beginning. You know, we had two different turntables. There weren't no Techniques 1200s at that time. No B1s or whatever else.
We're talking about 1966.
No, early 70s.
Early 70s, okay.
And so the original setup was... You know, before we had the big speakers was, okay, you got a pretty decent sound system in your crib. I got a pretty decent sound system in my crib. You bring yours out. I'll bring mine out if Mom's allows us to do that day.
And you'll have...
And we'll have two turntables. Hopefully they're compatible, which they never were. One was louder than the other one. And then we said one day, oh, maybe if we just tie the wires together, we can, you know, have both speakers playing out or everything. So... That was the beginning of it. No cue, no nothing.
So how were you going back and forth between the turntables?
Based upon the vibe of the party.
No, but like how would you literally switch if you didn't have an original fader back
then?
Right.
Oh, because you had two systems going, but the wires were crossed.
Right.
So technically you could play them both at the same time.
With your boy. 3, 2,
ready?
Fade. Fade it.
Boom. Patchy.
Wow. were you playing 12 inches?
Yeah. After, well, once we got to the 12-inch stage, once that 12-inch was a DJ thing, and that's when, you know, mixers started to come about.
So at first, were you playing 45s?
You were playing albums.
Playing just off albums?
Yeah, album tracks. You knew where the break was at. There was no cue. You knew where the break was at.
How clean would you get it? Were you good?
Nah, you know, it was all about the songs that you played. You know, there was nothing else.
it was just what it was.
Trans Europe Express. It came on and the whole place went nuts. You know, James Brown, the whole place went nuts. MFSB, Love is the Message, the whole place went nuts. You know, and then, you know.
It's all about selection, baby.
Yeah. You just knew. There were guys like that, what's the guy out now? Felix Hernandez. He does old school parties in New York. And he just puts the record on in the whole place and 4,000 people are dancing.
Felix Hernandez?
I think something like that.
And he doesn't.
Oh, the guy that was on Kiss?
Yeah.
It's not Hernandez. I know who you're talking about, though.
Something like that.
And
is he Spanish? He has a Spanish name, but on the radio, he sounds black as fuck.
Right, right, right.
He's always, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
You sound.
He's a Coca-Cola. For those who know what that means.
He has like a black, he's always on black radio stations. But he's like, this is Felix. What the fuck is his name?
Figure it out, Sife. Figure it out, Gabs. Sasha, do you always edit the N-word? Or in public?
Well, it's interesting because that's a whole...
I mean, we can't that's do... A, that's I don't want to do 40 minutes on
that's
it.
I'm actually working on a film about that, but I'm not a fan of it. I wasn't raised to call myself and other people like me that. I understand that hip-hop has adapted this sort of sensibility, and this has always been how I've been. This is not like...
Not me. With the new conversation.
No, this isn't because I'm old and I'm feeling a way. You know, and I understand it's like... Language amongst people is one thing, right? And you're with friends and it's one thing. And Tom Hanks's son obviously has some B-level black rappers on his payroll where they're like, yeah, my nigga, it's cool. You could call us that. Yeah, yeah. Pay the demo. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that why that would make him feel like it's okay for him to say it.
Tom Hanks's son
got into it for saying the N-word and he got in trouble. And then
and
he kept,
like, I could say it.
But here's the thing,
he had a
and he's like,
pass, but he tried to use a national.
But then he
had a regional. He had a very small regional pass.
But then he's like, "Ain't nobody could tell me how I could use." And it's like, "Yo, you know what?
You're right.
In America, I have to speak English, right? If I go for a fucking job as a black man, I'm like, "Ain't no, sorry, Mr. Rosenberg, sir, ain't nobody gonna tell me." That's not gonna work for me. But you have the fucking privilege of being Tom Hanks's son with probably the best fresh fruit in the world at your disposal and the best education.
Which is what makes it inherently fucked up that you would ever say the N-word. Because he has the choice to do whatever the fuck he wants. I completely see what you're saying.
You know, so personally, I feel like words have power, right? I love hip-hop. Hip-hop uses the N-words. People I love use the N-word. I get it. But, like, I think word has power. And if you continue to call yourself something over and over and over again, think about Death Row Records. Okay, Suge, Death Row Records, that's your shit? Where's Suge right now? He's essentially on death row. Think about...
Ready to die.
Think about the power of words. So then deconstruct, well, what is a nigger? What is that? What does that really mean? Where does that come from? Oh, so being a nigger, a real nigger means you don't take no shit? Like, what the fuck does that mean? A real nigger means you fight for what's yours? What the fuck do you own? You own your block? You own your motherfucking bandana?
Oh, you want it. You got it.
So you're that nigger. Okay, so then you're that nigger, right? So then that nigger is going to be in a nigger box. Right. But I have the benefit of a certain level of consciousness. Right. So I guess I could say, yeah, Ralph's my nigga. You know, I could do that if I wanted to and understand the ramifications. But peace to all my young Dominicans who live uptown. I live uptown. It's infuriating that every other fucking word from you fucks is my nigga, 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 my nigga. And then my Haitian niggas, because I'm half Haitian. Those niggas are being fucking deported back to Haiti, who have been in the Dominican Republic for how many generations,
sure,
right? So it's like, you guys need, people need to understand the genesis of where this word comes from and how it affects consciousness and how we feel about ourselves. You listen to all this music and it's like, I'm gonna kill that, I'm gonna smoke that nigga. Why are you wanting to kill someone who's in the same position as you? And just bringing it really back quickly back to the film, there's a guy named Mayer. Many of you know him. He has a huge sneaker collection, right?
Oh, yeah, man, yeah.
Boricua, great guy from the Bronx. He tells the story of when he was growing up, like, yeah, my mom bought me some Mark V sneakers, and I thought I was a man because my name is Mark. But then I got laughed off the block because I had these cheap sneakers. So here I am now. I'm 40-something years old, and I have the largest collection of sneakers in the world and can't no one fuck with me. And so on one level, yeah, that's gangster. I respect that. That's cool. But let's look at where that comes from. It comes from people in your own community ridiculing you, and the only way you can feel good about yourself is to buy some shit that your mother can't afford. And I remember that growing up in the inner city. I came from Silver Spring, Maryland. I fucking sound funny. You know what I'm saying? When I was a kid, I got sick. I had fucking scars on my face from chicken pox. You know what I'm saying? So I'm in New York. People are snapping on me. I'm dealing with all this shit, right? But then you pull back, and it's like, we have low self-esteem. I love, you know, my Jewish people and my Asians, and maybe you can explain this to me. Maybe I don't know it, but we have something called the dozens in the black community, where it's become this art form where we tear each other down, and we're artists, we're masters at shitting on ourselves. Do Jewish folks have a whole art form where it's like, we're going to go out of our way to snap on each other and, hurt each other's feelings, and we're going to laugh about it?
No. I mean, there's we have inside jokes that Jews like to make about Jews, not the same thing.
But you understand what I'm saying.
Course.
It's like
the whole concept
of
snapping and mama jokes and all that shit.
Where does that come from? It comes from the pot calling the kettle black. Well, what does that mean? What does carte blanche mean? What are all these things that are in our public, in our consciousness every day that we don't realize is a manifestation of white supremacy? And these are the things that I was hoping, some of those things, including fun and hip hop and good times, that I wanted to convey in my film.
Well, let me tell you, by the way, you're not on Twitter. Damn it. I'm like, well, and where can people find you? So no one's even able to comment to you to tell you how the science you're dropping. Because I will tell you, these are topics that I have a lot of conversations about in my world. It comes up quite a bit. I'm not just bullshitting you because you're on one app. Honestly, I know you very well. I was actually more excited about Ralph. You're dropping some fucking, you are taking some shit that I hear about all the time and really saying it in a way that people need to hear to understand the N-word conversation. That's just one small piece of it. But like, I'm in this world all the time where we always used to joke about it, like, why do white people want to say it so bad? Like, why do you need to have this thing? And furthermore, why do black people feel the need to say it to it? And you just do it. You're putting a fucking bow on it,
but,
and making it make a lot of sense.
But to make it even more contemporary, let's look at the Confederate flag, right? If you're white and you had ancestors who fought for that cause and they lost and you want to have that flag, I don't give a fuck. You know why? Because that's your right as a quote unquote American. As long as you're not touching me, you can do what you want. Now, I understand local government flying the flag and people having a problem with that, but the Confederate flag to white people is what the N-word has become to black people. The Confederate flag represents this rebellion and like, all this like really like controversial shit, and so many white people are so attached to it. That's why they're so upset. They feel like they're being attacked.
Well, how about this though? I might be throwing something smart into your brilliant conversation. Like the N-word, the Confederate flag represents what? Losing. They're holding on to this thing that really was the embodiment that they fucking lost.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's like white loserdom. Like that's what that flag means.
Right.
Southern white fucking loserdom.
Right, and they want to hold on to it.
And they want to hold on to it so bad.
Just like some black people and some Latinos want to hold on to nigger. You want to hold on to some shit that brands you a fucking loser? What part of the game is this? And I know Q-Tip made an amazing song that talked about it, and I appreciate the art form. It's powerful.
But even in his song, though, I think he'd be the first to say this, he's confused in the song. The whole song's about being confused about it. It's not like at the end, he's like, and that's the way it's going to be. He's like, it's fucked up, but I just say it. You know what I'm saying? Like, so even he was very confused by it. Anyways, that was amazing. Okay, Ralph.
Yes.
We got to get to, because we'll have you back again another time, but we still have to get to some shit. How do we get from you DJing in the early 70s in the park to being fucking doctor of everything that is video and hip hop? Take us on a brief journey you get there.
Go to college in Long Island, study film, study TV, get a job.
Wait, you didn't sell drugs?
Nah.
You ain't from the streets?
Nah. We had a house. I had a basement.
You had a basement, yo.
Yeah, I had a basement.
Woo!
Hey.
What school did you go to?
I went to Bayside High School in Queens.
What college?
I went to New York Institute of Technology in Westbury. Mm-hmm. It's not too far from CW Post for people. Yeah. You know that school. Hired you a couple of times as DJ out there. I think we did.
Yeah.
And so graduated, worked at the station, local station, NYC TV, was looking around and was like, yo, man, we need to put something together. Some couple of videos came in that were, we'd never seen these things on TV. I said, yo, I want to make a show with these videos. And we started doing it. And that was 1983. And we called it Video Music Box. And it was Ralph McDaniels and the Vid Kid. And then we started going to clubs like.
The videos were coming to the little station.
No, actually, in coming up, Russell Simmons, I mentioned earlier from Hollis, we were from the same hood. And I said, Russ, you got a couple of groups that you work. Russell was like a promoter. He would bring me records when I DJed. Like, he was like Sam Crespo or something.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And so he would bring the records and he would bring me records. And then I was like, yo, do they have, anything else? And then he would show me videos. And I was like, yo, can I get a copy of that? And so he was like, well, I said, I'm thinking about starting this TV show. And he didn't have any conception of. He was like more into radio. And so he's like, yeah, yeah, take all of that, you know. And I started taking it and putting it on the show. And then I would go and interview groups and then get the performances of them at clubs, at, you know, wherever, block parties, whatever
Brand
it was.
Nubian at
right.
Kilimanjaro.
At Kilimanjaro. Dope.
Thank you, Ralph.
Dope. Yeah, dope. Big up Dante Ross. Yeah, he was down then. And then, yeah, so the show started. We started doing our thing. Here it is. We're still on, 2015. We're still playing some of the new stuff that Sasha hates. And
some of the classics as well.
Some of the classics
as well.
All
right, so, okay.
I shouldn't say Sasha hates, but Sasha
I'm just not familiar.
Yeah.
So in 83, you start this thing. I'm guessing it doesn't immediately, like, catch fire.
Weirdly enough, it did, because it was nothing on TV, you know.
And what videos were you playing in 83?
In 83, it was like, you know, Tears for Fear, Shout. It was What People Do for Money, Divine Sounds. It was the beginning of, Run DMC really didn't quite get there yet with videos. But, The Message, Sugar Hill, Flash. Sugar Hill, Flash, Grandmaster Flash. So, you know, those were the beginnings. And then it was a lot of R&B stuff, the Whispers and, you know, kind of disco stuff. But that's what people were into at the time. Like, hip-hop hadn't totally taken over yet. So that was what was happening. And it was, you know, I might play Bruce Springsteen or something that was cool, you know.
Of course.
You know, that kind of stuff, they're cool. You know, we'd never seen them before. We just heard them on the radio. So now you're seeing them like, oh, I didn't know they were white. Oh.
And now that you think about the intro of Video Music Box had all these old videos in it.
Madonna.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix,
James Brown, Run DMC, Fat Boys. You know, that was what New York sounded like.
And it's so amazing because basically your show reflected what everything we ever hear about the origins of hip hop felt like, which is mad other shit.
Right. It wasn't, there was no such word as genres yet.
Well, not for hip hop, certainly.
Not for hip hop, yeah. Right.
There were six artists. Like, yeah. What kind of genre is this? Yeah.
But, you know, still, you know, people, when you went to clubs, you listened to everything. You know, people go, I didn't know you were into house music. You know, I didn't know you were into B-more, you know,
club
music. I'm like, yeah, we used to play that. You know, I played it. Red played it. Molly played it. We all played it, you know, because that's what the people wanted to hear.
And so did you stay – how long did you stay at the same place? Always the same?
Technically, yeah. It's the same station. And the one thing I tell people is that, you know, I had opportunities. I went to MTV in 86 and said, yo, I want to do a rap show. And they were like, no way. People are going to be into that in middle America. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're buying Run DMC records. Run DMC was out at the time. Houdini was out at the time. LL was out at the time. Eric B and Rakim is
out. No, 86 is starting to move.
I mean, yeah. They were like, no way. And I was like, but you don't understand, Ralph. It's on TV. It's different than going to a show or a concert. You can't put that in somebody's living room.
Put what in somebody's living room?
Hip-hop. That's what they told me. And so I was like, all right. And then in 87 is when they started.
So how do you feel about that when you see that they're starting with?
I wasn't pissed off because I was directing videos at that time.
So your videos were getting played.
Now I was getting national shine, you know, besides local shows in different areas. Because there were other shows like mine. I wasn't the only one by that time. You know,
you were just in New York.
Right, just in New York. Right,
so that makes...
Right.
That's what made it what it was.
Yeah.
So what were the first videos you started directing? Remember the first one you ever did?
Well, hip-hop was MC Shan, Left Me Lonely.
Great video.
Yeah.
The lipstick the lipstick on the mirror
touched
me to this day. Ask Elliot Wilson will tell you that too. That's a great video, man.
The girl did him wrong. And he
did
went
him
crazy.
Wrong.
And Shan went nuts.
What else? Mm-hmm. What else came after that?
We did a freestyle video for this girl on Fever Records. I can't remember the title right now. But anything on Cold Chillin', Biz Markie, all the Biz Markie videos we did.
Symphony video?
Symphony.
Now, were you considering yourself a director yet, or are you just the guy who's making this shit come together?
My partner, Lionel, was the director. I was the producer.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah. What was his name?
Lionel Martin, VidKid.
He's VidKid.
VidKid, yeah.
Lionel Martin is the VidKid?
Yeah, the same guy. Yeah.
You know what's funny? Because Premier's name is Christopher Lionel Martin.
Right.
And I used to be like, is Premier directing these videos?
Yeah.
You know, so, you just read names on back of covers, and I'm like, I wonder if that's Premier.
Yeah. Yeah, now we did a bunch of early gangstar stuff. Big Daddy Kane. Cold Chillin' Records was really good to us. Big up to them because they just said, you're going to do all our stuff, you know. And so we did a lot of the Cold Chillin', Kool G Rap and Polo, you know, Roxanne Shante, whatever, the list goes on. Don't Curse by Heavy D and the Boy, we did that, you know, which was a pretty cool project.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, all the Bell Biv DeVoe videos, we did that.
So how do you jump into that? Like, that's...
Well, we were hot in hip-hop, and you got, you know, Michael Bivins was trying to make a transition out of the New Edition situation because he wasn't sure if that would ever continue because they were kind of breaking up and doing whatever they were doing. And he came up with Bell Biv DeVoe, and he needed a hip-hop look to it, and he came to us and said, I want y'all to do it. And that was it, you know.
And you did Poison.
We did Poison, we did Doomy, we did... two or three other ones. We did the whole first TLC album.
So how are the checks for these videos? Were you guys getting what was the budget like that they would come up with? And would you set a proposal? Would you be like, all right, this is what I'm going to need? How did this go? Like, this is also new.
Yeah, it was all new. And you know, you would sit down by the time we're talking about Bell Biv DeVoe and TLC. You know, like
by then it's a little more structured.
It's a little bit more structured. But the early days was like, okay, I think we're going to need like, you know, 15,000. I think we're going to need like 20,000. Mine was shooting in film. Big difference from what people do today. You know.
So you had to spend money. They knew you had to spend money.
Yeah.
Just to use the cameras and get the film and everything.
Right. Just to develop the film, 16mm film to process it. Everything that had to go along with film.
So you guys were editing on like Steenbecks?
No. We weren't. Ooh. That's even more expensive. So what we would do is transfer the film to a tape and then edit it on tape. And that's how you would get the big, bulky tapes that MTV and Video Music Box were playing at that particular time. So it was these things called 3/4-inch tape. It's real dumb technical stuff now. But anyway, that's where we went. And, you know, we did over 400 videos. You know, I had Hype Williams was my assistant. You know, he was working with me.
Hello.
On the side. Yeah.
That turned out all right.
Yeah, and that turned out really good for him. You know, I told him, you know, I tell people the story all the time. I said, yo, Hype, you know, you're always going over budget, man. You know, like, don't go over budget anymore because you're spending the company fee. That's my money. And, and he continued to go over budget through his whole life. So,
yeah, that's he became known for it.
Right.
What did he go by back then?
Hype.
He was always hype.
Yeah, he was a writer. He was a graph writer. Hype.
And Hype was always his thing.
Yeah, that was his thing.
Did you develop any particularly close relationships with any specific artists who always came back to you or anything like that?
Yeah, we still do. You know, we're friends. R. Kelly, we did a Robert Kelly in Public Announcement. That was the first R. Kelly record.
Wow.
Robert Kelly.
You did She's Got That Vibe?
Right. We did all of that stuff. Yeah. He's still, you know, we still.
Your eyes, like, your eyebrows, like, raised.
You mean,
like,
you
still,
were touched
like,
by
that.
He still calls you?
Nah, I mean, you know, we see each other. Yo, what's really? Up, Ralph? Yo, he'll come across the room and stop. You know, he won't be like. Give you the nod.
Mm. I interviewed R. Kelly last night. It was very interesting.
You did?
Yeah.
Where?
It was like a listening lounge.
What didn't you tell me?
It was
my guy.
I know, Kels. I know. Believe me, I thought about the story. Sorry. Yeah. It was weird though. I thought about your situation with him many times. He's an interesting dude.
What's the situation?
Well, Syfe went and interviewed him years ago for MTV. And
his house.
He was like signing releases, and he sat there for like, you waited for him for like 15 hours in his house.
Handled you?
Handled us.
Oh, man.
We weren't even, it was supposed to be a day trip. We had to stay the night.
Yeah, but
I got with him and told him how much a fan I was, everything was smooth after that. But I would have got with him earlier before he decided to braid his hair, play basketball, go out and get food, go out and buy 19 white Air Force Ones.
I did ask him about Michael, though, and he did give a fucking amazing Michael Jackson story.
Really?
Yeah, about the when they did You Are Not Alone. You ever have any Michael run-ins or no?
No Michael run-ins.
What about the Summer Jam day, though? You're the only one who has footage.
Yeah, I was back.
Even though the footage is shit, but you still have it.
Yeah, well, you know, Michael came in like at whatever time it was at that time. Like,
we're talking about, by the way, when Jay-Z brought out Michael Jackson.
Right. And so they cleared it out. You know, I'm sure that Tracy Clardy was yelling, Ralph, put the camera away. And I'm like, right. Then
Were you working at Hot at all the time or no?
I was working there.
You were also working at Hot.
Yeah, and... And so he came in with his crew, and he had a bunch of kids with him. You know, this was at 12 o'clock at night, so it was like, why do you have these kids?
But, how old were the kids?
Like, young kids. But you know, but that's how he rolled, man. You know, that was Mike. You know, he just like loves the children.
Mike loves the kids, that's for sure.
And so, you know, he jumped on stage. I think he was like, "What is this?" You know, I really felt like he was like,
he definitely didn't know what was going
on. He didn't know what was going on.
Definitely didn't know.
You know,
Hove like, just convinced him to do this thing.
Come on stage with me.
Right. So I don't even think he had any idea what he was walking into. You know, like he knew it was an arena, but like the look on his face was like, what's happening here?
It definitely wasn't.
And so how close were you when like everything got cleared out? Like, were you still close?
Yeah, I mean, he was like, you know, 20 feet away. He walked by me. You know, security looked at me with the camera because I had the camera down. I didn't have, that's why the footage is not that great, because I was trying to be cool so they didn't run up on me and take the camera.
Of course.
And then once he got past us, then I put the camera up on the screen and you see, you know, some of it.
And he just comes out there and stands there for a second.
He just stood there, right? Yeah. People were just like, I think they didn't know.
They didn't even know it was him at first.
Yeah, people were kind of like, that can't be Michael Jackson. Yeah. Look at his face.
Yeah.
You know, he looked crazy.
Did he look crazy in person too?
Yeah.
No, but when he passed us in the hallway, you could tell it was Mike.
Yeah.
But when
you remember
the stage,
it too?
Yeah, it was right. Like, we like, you know those moments at Summer Gym when like someone big's coming through the hallway and they like,
the commotion
either move you or like they're just pressing you against the wall. I was pressed against the wall and he walked right past me. And I was like, oh, shit, Michael Jackson. But then when he went on stage, it was too, because that was the year we were at Nassau Coliseum. So it was like, there's not even like really like a front row. Like there was like a big
hold on.
Space.
I didn't even realize he got him to come out to fucking Nassau Coliseum.
Long Island, baby.
For some reason, I thought it was already in the stadium by then.
No, it wasn't in the stadium.
It was a couple years before still.
Yeah, it was a fucking bullshit. Like WWF was there the night before.
Yeah, he pulled in now like that was the only car that could fit in the driveway. That was it.
And then afterwards, of course, you have the classic interview with Hove where they're sitting there celebrating and Hove just has this look on his face of like,
yeah,
you can't tell me shit ever again in fucking life.
Yeah, I think that was like, you know, what more can I say? That was it with Hove, you know, and I waited. He did an R. Kelly on me that night, actually, Hove.
Oh.
Not that long.
Yeah.
And I walked with him literally off the stage and went right to the dressing room. And, you know, and you could tell Hove was like, you know, he was up, you know. And then I'm standing there with the camera. I know him for, you know, when he was, you know.
You do any videos?
Original Flavor. No, I don't think I ever did any. And so he's just like, okay, just give me a second to figure this out.
Yeah.
And that turned into like 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, and so everybody's running around doing whatever they're doing. And so finally I was like, yo, dude, like, you know, like everybody left. You know, like I really want to get at it. So then he goes, I'm not going to say nothing. Let everybody else talk. And I was like, what?
You waited for 3 hours to just let.
Yeah. And that's the.
And he just points to people. He just points to people.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Beans.
Yeah.
No, not even Beans. What was the other guy? The first guy that was down with him?
Pain in the ass?
No, the other guy. That era, though. Fuck,
yeah,
what was that dude's name?
Well, someone who's on mic?
Sauce Money. He left Sauce Money too.
Oh, Sauce Money, right, yeah. Big up Sauce Money, yeah.
So what's your relationship like with someone like Hove today? You ever see these guys today? I mean, obviously, because even at that point, right? And I say this with all due respect. Obviously, you know how I feel about you. But even at that point, the reach that you have is much less than the reach that Hove is getting.
Absolutely.
But they still always made time just on the strength? Is it just on the love of you being Ralph?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, it's well with him. You know, and Dame Dash, you know, like they literally came to the office, you know, first time they ever had a video out and was like, yo, please play my joint, you know, like, and I was like, I got it. I know who you are. I be in the clubs. I see y'all moving around. You know, we gave him the generic, you know, I got you, son, you know, but he really had it, you know, and
how
and
do it. Do you know that he had it though? Like you could tell that he,
Yeah. I think so. From a Brooklyn standpoint, we had him in a couple of clubs. We, you know, and plus he always brought the girls with him. That was the cool thing about Hove is that, you know, it's like Fab has that kind of appeal too. Like they bring women to the party. Like, yo, we got to bring, because up to that point, it's a bunch of dudes at a hip hop show.
No, it's a specific kind of rap artist that girls actually come out for.
Yeah, you know, and you know, Diddy started, you know, making it kind of cool, and then you know everybody else started getting in, and then Hove was bringing girls. So we were like, yo, we got to be cool with Hove because he brings girls. And that was it. You know, that was important. And you could rap. So, all right, come on.
Well, even before that, well, I'm going to tell you this. Ralph, and I'm sure a lot of other people have these stories, but you saved my life because I moved to Long Island.
And you got hit by a car one day. You're on the side of the road, and Ralph drove by, and he pulled you off the road.
CPR.
And he gave you CPR.
No, I moved to Long Island in 10th grade, and I wasn't a super hip-hop head when I lived in the Bronx. It just was there. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's that's the difference about people that grow up in it. It was just there. I didn't know you had to be, like, a fan of it. It was just music. This is what's on. I like this. I like that. Then when I moved, I felt the culture shock. So all I had was, like, BLS and KISS on the weekends and Video Music Box every day. That was the difference.
Right. Yeah, because it wasn't really on radio like that. Yeah.
Sorry, Ralph.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Daily OMTV raps or weekly?
By that time.
It was daily.
I think it was 4:30.
Yeah.
And Video Music Box was 3:30.
Yeah.
So you get a nice little dose. But, like, I still have, still to this day, I have video VHS cassettes of me just taping Video Music Box. And, like, the Brand Nubian episode with the Kilimanjaro. It wasn't just Brand Nubian. There was other artists.
It was Brand Nubian. It was Leaders of New School.
Yeah, Leaders, yep.
Busta. It was, oh, man, somebody else was on that show. That was important.
Why do you love this show so much, Sif, this episode?
It's just because I had it on tape and I would watch it over and over.
What they perform?
I think All for One. And Slow Down. It was like throughout the whole show, it was different.
You were cutting back to
it. Is it the God Body Connect too?
That's how I became from that stuff.
You see?
Yeah. Like watching all that. Then like, but tons like King Sun videos. King Sun.
All God Body
all like the King stuff.
Lakim Shabazz, if you want to.
Of course.
God Body.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but it wasn't. I don't know, something weird about it.
Do you like his verse on the rap version of the 900 number?
No.
Don't listen to that version. For some reason, people always listen to the instrumental.
Yeah, you have to.
That's funny because the 45 has the rap version on the other side. I'm like, I forgot this even existed.
Yeah, but there's just tons of episodes where it was just like, I forgot other places you went.
Oh, we went to the Ark in Brooklyn. We went to,
different clubs.
Yeah, 1018. Oh, the Fresh Fest. Did you ever see that?
Yes. Yeah. So that one, Crazy. Fresh Fest.
Yeah, Crazy. That was Run DMC, Fat Boys Houdini.
Yep.
Mr. Magic backstage, you know.
But doing interviews or hanging out?
Just hanging out, you know, Red hanging out, you know, all these different people.
Have you gone through everything you have?
Nah, not everything. But we're doing pretty good now. Everything is digitized. Like,
how much is digitized?
I would say about 10,000 hours.
What, each episode?
Of footage, of raw footage.
I'm asking, I guess, about both.
Oh, you probably got some crazy shit, man.
Like, what do you...
Well, like...
You might got some... You well, might
hey, Sasha, what are we going to do with this?
Well, that's...
You probably have some shit you don't even know you have,
that's the right. Conversations are being had.
You have Biggie in the background somewhere, and I didn't even know it was Biggie, like some event or
exactly.
Like... You got so much shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
But the hard part is going through that tape is like, it sounds very exciting. No, but I know because I have my own bullshit tapes from doing shit, which and there's bullshit. There's tons of just bullshit that you got to sit through.
And you got to sit through it to get you never to know the good shit.
Yeah. And you were just like, I'll leave the camera on and save the tape.
Right. You know, but you know, it's worth it. I like it. I think that time is omatic. We had about 20 minutes worth of footage in that.
Mm-hmm. That's the episode.
Yeah.
The original.
Oh, the live at the producers. Barbecue. Oh, no, that, the EPK. Oh, the, yeah.
Of
yeah,
the Nas
that.
Shit.
Yeah.
With all the
oh, you
premieres.
Did the Nas EPK video, right?
Yeah. Woo. And then they asked me to direct It Ain't Hard to Tell.
Yeah.
So that's how it all happened at the same time.
Do you have footage with Big L?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Pun?
Pun, yep.
Any Pac?
Yeah. I was associate producer for Juice, so I had a camera backstage.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have
a camera backstage at Juice.
He was in Juice too,
right?
I mean behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, right?
Did you ever want to punch Ed Lover and Dr. Dre in the face?
Nah.
Did you ever
nah.
tell Fab Five Freddy he was gonna fucking pile drive?
Well, Ed Lover was from my neighborhood in Queens. We grew up in the same.
And y'all were cool.
Hey, yo, Fab, fuck you, man.
Yeah, Fab, I didn't know, but you know, I knew
you're in a fucking art. Why are you hosting a fucking video show?
But I knew Fab was slick. You know, Fab had that thing. You know, Fab was cool. You know, and.
He had the downtown New York fucking vibe going.
Yeah.
But still, it is slightly a travesty that you weren't the one who got the show handed to you, although ultimately it doesn't really affect your legacy or what you have, the treasure trove you have.
Yeah, I think the thing for me was like, you know, we talk about, you know, like growing up, and my father owned a candy store. I said to myself, I want to own my own business. And that's what I've done, you know, over the years. I worked at Hot 97 for 10 years. I never was excited about that. I did it because I knew it was important. Flex said, you should be on the radio. But I never felt like I was doing my own thing. You know, I was like, you know, I got a shift on Saturday. I got a shift somewhere.
No, and it felt nice to hear. It felt like you should be there.
Yeah. But on Video Music Box, I feel totally comfortable because I can do whatever. If I say, okay, we're going to play some Hall & Oates tonight, or we're going to play, you know, Mobb Deep tonight, or we're going to play whatever.
The Lifers.
Right, the Lifers. You know,
Lifers Group?
Yeah.
Lifers Group.
Yeah.
Mobb Style.
Mobb Style, right.
Mobb Style video got a lot of burn. I wondered about that.
Yeah. That was a true story.
I mean, I didn't know who Mobb Style was. Yeah.
I don't even know Mobb Style.
You know,
the original AZ. Yeah.
The original AZ.
You know, AZ, Rich Porter.
It was the Rich Porter story.
The painful movies based on.
But they had a group?
Mobb Style.
Well, yeah.
Was their group or they were in the group?
AZ was in the group.
AZ was in the group.
AZ's then, the guy who got shot.
After he got out of jail.
But then there was a discrepancy between that AZ and the other AZ that came out with Nas.
AZ?
Yeah, like the other AZ tried to step to AZ.
Sugar Hill.
Legally, I think it, you know, he took it off the streets and tried to serve him. Something happened. I don't know.
You got served with court papers.
What about Scenario videos
was the first time I saw a Video Music Box.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
All a brand new
with
videos.
The old ass.
He rocks. He'll smooth.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had a concert where we had it on 14th Street with Tribe Called Quest, first album. Coogee Rapping Polo, Biz, Main Source.
What do you mean? You threw the concert?
I threw it. It's like
Video Music Box.
Do you remember the Mark Ballroom?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was right next to the
Mark Ballroom. Yeah.
What's that? The coffee shop.
Yeah. They used to have record conventions down there during the day. Like,
so, like, you know, like maybe 1,000 people.
I think that's where Diamond D touched that guy.
Really?
I think it was there, Mark Ballroom.
What do you mean, touched him?
We'll tell you after.
The Tumbling Dice situation.
Oh, wow.
Remember where Diamond D says he used the same sample and he kind of went in his pocket?
He didn't say he used the same sample.
Oh, he used the same
sample. He used the same sample. I mean, Tumbling Dice is great, but...
No. Rashid Smith?
Rashad.
Yeah. Rashad Smith.
Over the whatchamacallit sample, Day One. The DITC record, and then Diddy used it.
Oh, so he put his hands on someone because of that?
I think he went in his pocket.
Oh, he sued him?
No. He physically went in his pocket.
He said he... Yeah, Diamond had the sample first for Digging in the Crates album, like an independent album. And then that kid used it for
No Way Out.
The Diddy album with him and Diddy and Jay-Z rhyme on it. So he's probably like, you owe me for that. You know you heard that. You
so
know
he I physically went in his pocket.
That's what I heard.
And took his wallet.
I don't know about that.
Whatever money.
You sound more surprised than I feel like you should be over this.
You go to record collection, conventions with a lot of money in your pocket to buy records.
I see. It was at a convention.
So it was kind of like, you owe me some for this.
Wow.
Allegedly.
It's all alleged, and in all fairness, I think Tumbling Dice is a great guy and a great producer. In all fairness, though, it is a really great sample. So I understand getting very sensitive.
And both songs are dope.
Both songs are fantastic. Diamonds is way dirtier. Tumbling Dice is crispier.
And slower.
Slow down. Smoother. And, you know, and Diddy came in and fucking added his Diddy.
You gotta put those sprinkles on it.
Those Diddy sprinkles on it. Made it sound all clean. How much stuff do you have that's like iconic? Potentially, that's never been seen. Like, have people seen all the Pac footage?
No.
Have people seen all the big footage you have?
No.
Have people seen all the pun footage you have?
No.
You had footage from Juice. You were behind the scenes. Like, yeah. It's just you were just shooting random shit.
Remember in Juice? Well, I don't know.
The
DJ battle. Yeah. That whole scene.
So all the people that were there.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Queen Latifah didn't
there.
Have to say he was local. Wasn't nice. She didn't have to say he was local.
I know. Oh, he's just local. Not nice. So, do you have a plan set in place yet for what you want to do with all this stuff? Or is it, I mean, I'm sure people step to you with ideas.
Yeah, I mean, we license all the time, you know, like all of these TV shows that you see, like, you know, Unsung and Behind the Music.
And BET did that history of.
Well, never, I've never done too many things with BET.
Really?
But MTV, VH1, the BBC in London, Channel 4 in Germany. I mean, you go, you know, it goes around.
License footage
all the time, you know. The Tribe Called Quest, Beats, Rhymes, and Life, tons of my stuff in there. And now, Fresh Dress is out.
Fresh Dress.
And that's the whole other thing is that, you know, when Sasha started talking about Fresh Dress is that I was like, wait a minute. Let me tell you the story about this dude I know. He used to work in, you know, Red Lobster, and, you know, he came up to me.
Sife, calm down.
And he came up to me, and me and my crew were sitting there. He's like, yo, I got this clothing line. come check it out. I want to show it to you. I know you, Ralph McDaniel, you'll be on TV. And I was like, all right, what's it called? And he's like, FUBU.
I knew it.
And I was like, all right, let me check it out. And so he had like 5 shirts. And I was like, go come to the office next week. We'll do an interview with you and we'll put it on TV. And so that's what he did.
Does he thank you to this day?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you go on Shark Tank with your new
I hope so.
Video, I'm going to call him. Something?
Mr. Shark Tank, Damon, come on. Like, I got an idea. We want to get money.
Do you have any bitterness towards people you've helped make stars?
Nah, I can't be. I'm not a hater. Nah, I can't.
I never was a hater, but this year I feel like I'm going to start hating.
Well, you know what? I can understand why it's easy to feel like that, but don't. Don't do that. Don't do it.
That's that crabs in the barrel. That's what they want you to do. Why can't you be happy for your brother's success?
I don't have no hate towards anybody. But you made a lot. Like my, you're very humble. You're not going to talk about yourself. The best is when Flex talks about you. He bigs you up. Like,
well, Hot 97. If Hot 97 was cold,
frozen.
Yeah, and we went up there with a camera and we
made that shit hot overnight. It up
because Flex was my DJ, one of my DJs. Yeah. You know, not my DJ, but I liked Flex as a DJ. And I would say, yo, I want to use Flex all the time. And then he used to work with Jessica. Mm-hmm. And so Jessica would always take him away. I could never get him. But, you know, I always respected Flex as a DJ. And so
all he wanted was to be on Video Music.
Yeah. So how much shit do you have at Hot?
Tons of stuff from the beginning, from day one, when it was still playing dance music.
But Ralph was walking around with a camera before. Nowadays, everyone walks around with a camera. Like, think about, like, pre-internet, pre-fucking digital editing on your Mac laptop. Like, Ralph always had a camera or a camera crew and was the only one, like, oh, all the concerts, anything at Hot, they were like, oh, Ralph could tape it. You know, somebody should tape this. There was no video department like there is now.
Right, so would that happen a lot, too? They're having an event, and they'd be like, hey, can you just bring a camera?
Yeah. Now it happens.
Well, and then not to mention, you get access to everything because everyone loved Ralph. So
well, not always. You know, it has changed. That's when it gets a little tricky right now because sometimes people just don't know who you are. There's some, you know, cute little girl who's like 19 and she's like,
and you're like,
I've never heard of you. I don't know anything about Video Music Box. And I'm like, fuck out the way, bitch. And, you know, then they call security. Like,
why are you black with an Irish name?
Like, are you related to the basketball player Xavier McDaniel? That's a really old reference for her to make also. I mean, she knows
him. I'm going
to
tell you where Video
Nick,
Music Box...
Is that
Box,
a Nick pun?
Can I tell you where Video Music Box took a dive, though?
Okay.
Yes. Here we go. Keep real talk. Real talk.
I mean, I'm sorry to mention this to you.
No,
keep it real talk.
Don't be upset.
Keep it real talk.
I have an idea.
But Ray DeJean.
That's your man.
No, this kid. That's his kid.
That's your comedy
I'm
buddy.
Joking.
Yo, I haven't seen Ray DeJean in a long time.
I love Ray DeJean. I'm just
kidding. You know how Ray DeJean got on the show?
I'm fucking with you. I love Ray DeJean.
Because Diddy was having all this fly parties. This is when hip hop made the transition that we had to wear suits and wear shoes. And I was like, I ain't going to that shit with my shoes on. And so we got to get somebody to go there.
Send
that
the fly
to get
guy.
So we sent Ray. And that's what it was. You know,
he was the fly guy and he was down to dress up.
Ray, I'm joking. Shut up.
Hey, guys. Fresh Dress. It's Fresh on Dress. iTunes right now. You can rent it or buy it. And I hope everyone
will. Can we buy it on
will.
DVD?
Not yet, right?
Good question. Not yet.
One day.
Ralph, you are.
Canal Street.
You are, unlike Sasha, you are on Twitter and Instagram.
At Video Music Box on both, and Ralph McDaniels 5 on Facebook. I'm still on Facebook.
Ralph McDaniels 5 or Video Music Box on Instagram and Twitter.
You can go to Mass Appeal, at least for me, if you're semi-interested.
Mass you Appeal. Do have Mass Appeal. You did you direct?
Page. Somebody must have someone, put you
someone,
a fake
there's
page.
A, there's a fake page. It's not me.
Oh, okay.
Do you directed the Mass Appeal video for Gangstar?
No, I love that video. That's one of my favorite
What videos.
Videos
did you guys do?
Step in the Arena. And
Take It Personal? Rep?
No, we did.
No, Take It Personal?
Take It Personal, yes.
See?
Yes.
See? Why did I know that?
Yeah.
Good shit.
I just guessed. It felt like you did.
Yeah. Big up to Premier. He always says that. And Premier doesn't forget. And one thing about good is
no, he
good
doesn't.
About him. You know, he really doesn't forget. He'll
His
go,
memory is insane.
Ralph McDaniels. You know, like people go like, yo, well, MTV was killing the enemy. Well, wait. There was Video Music Box. He always does that. You know?
Oh, he is... Primo is the remember of both both who directed what videos and what random 80s porno bitch was getting fucked. You know what I'm saying?
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was very interested in that as well. Hey, guys.
I don't know if you can say that.
What do you mean?
Like, you're saying it shockingly. Like, what porno bitch was getting fucked. Like, they were all getting fucked.
But I mean, like he would know the style of how each bitch was getting fucked.
Got it.
Like, I like so-and-so, because when she was getting fucked, blank. And then it would be like a story about crack, and then porn stars, and then it just goes down a crazy rabbit hole, and I see Ralph nodding his head, because he knows these Primo stories.
Absolutely.
We need another Primo one, Epstein, by the way.
That's Primo, you know, when, you know, in the house, we're in the basement, we're doing things, we're figuring things out.
Of course.
Know? We weren't in the building, you know, in the hallway, we were in the basement, man, you know, the basement, a lot of things happen.
A lot of stories get told. So go rent or buy Fresh Dress right now, support Video Music Box, and thank you guys both, it's awesome.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Scythe?
Winding up.
And guys, hey, send us a fucking tweet at Rosenberg Radio or at Cypher Sounds that just says, hey, great fucking episode. Thank you. You're welcome. Go fuck yourself. Cypher, that's your negative?
No, it's fine.
All right. Love you guys. Peace.